Live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman and Kirk Cosby live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use, no doubt, starts now. This, my fellow Americans, is the broadcast for August 15th. In the year of our Lord, 2016, this is indeed our one of two. And our goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio in the traditions of our founding fathers. It's incredibly simple. We use the blueprint for liberty, the supreme law of the land, the Constitution for the United States of America. We also are convinced the checks and balances put in place by our founders, absolutely brilliant. That's why we don't need a revolution, but a restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth, no doubt, should be the order of the day. Quickly, Friday's broadcast, the summary starts now, brought to you in part by GiveMeLibertyFund.com. When you want a win-win-win situation for patriots, please think GiveMeLibertyFund.com. After 11 years, ladies and gentlemen, Arianna Huffington leaving the Huffington Post. My response, wow, finally. Arianna Huffington, she's the founder of what they call the pioneering digital news operation that bears her name. She's going to step down. She's going to start a new venture. All right. Well, maybe they'll attack us a little less, huh? Macy's melting down in the booming economy. Maybe they didn't get the memo on how good the economy is over there at Macy's. Closing 100 stores. They're going to reinvent themselves. I don't know what that means when they say they're going to reinvent themselves. They think they're going to change the game, do online stuff. You know, what do they think they're going to do? Yesteryear media, the yesteryear, sales model? Going away for sure. Disruptive technology everywhere. Second hour, we talked about the United States needs to stop funding, arming, and training terrorists. No joke. Donald Trump explains his, Obama and Hillary founded ISIS claim. He's calling it now sarcasm. What a tragedy. The New York Times. It is true that you can't directly say that Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton are the ISIS founders. But you can say that they certainly knew about it, let it happen on their watch. But you can also broaden the scope and say on both sides of the aisles, their war-mongering mentality. The military-industrial complex is built up around both parties to the point where we create more havoc globally with our hegemony-type attitude than you can imagine. The problem is Donald either doesn't have the education and or he's not willing to back into the real discussion. So he makes a belligerent statement, everybody mocks him, laughs at him, and then he doesn't back it up. He says it's sarcasm. In my opinion, it almost is worse than not bringing it up. Because when you do that, it's almost like the straw argument. You almost destroy what you claimed. It's kind of like you use your report full of facts. And then you discredit the reporter somehow. And it doesn't change that the facts are facts, but yet, since you discredited the reporter, now everything's discredited. Kind of like Barack with the birth certificate scenario. Donald came out and said, man, this is a fraud birth certificate. But he never pushed to get the facts and the concrete details. Joe Arpaio proved the birth certificate was a fraud. Why isn't Donald working with Joe? Joe's already a Donald supporter. Why aren't they busting that out? See, there's something wrong here, folks. Donald Trump on CNN said, I meant that Obama founded ISIS literally. But then following it up with, I guess it was just sarcasm. What happens when you make those kind of contradictory claims? Credibility out the window? That's the problem. Trump just confirmed every Republican's worst fear, CNBC claims. It's half true. A lot of what Trump says is great. But you wonder what he's really thinking, what he's really saying, what he's really doing. I invited the Donald to come to Utah and talk to me and Governor Herbert. Governor Gary Herbert of the state of Utah says he's going to vote for Donald. Trump says, I'm not going to pivot. Trump told CNBC that he has no willingness to change his campaign style. He says, I'm a truth teller. Why don't you push the truth all the way to its conclusions then, Donald? Hillary Clinton, of course, took to Twitter to respond to the Donald. She says the most significant event that one can pinpoint is the 23 invasion of Iraq by George Bush and Dick Cheney. So if anybody should get the blame, it should be them. See, that's the point that I'm getting at. It's hard to say Hillary's wrong too, isn't it? Wow. Hillary short-circuiting. What does that even mean? She's short-circuited. That means I committed fraud. I lied. I perjured myself. But I'm just going to tell you, I'm sorry. It was just like a, I don't know. What would they call that? A brain fart? A short circuit? I mean, what do you think about that, folks? And then she wants to be president? What if she short circuits at a critical time? What will it take for Trump to win? Trump has a problem in Utah, but he gets Governor Gary Herbert's vote. The key issues in the campaign for the Donald are Supreme Court nominees and jobs. The economy, stupid. Gary Herbert says that he hopes Trump can make good choices and put good people around him like Governor Mike Pence and others. Now the Justice Department's refusing to investigate the Clinton Foundation. More and more and more is happening. But all I'm telling you is I told you the keys to the game for the Donald. On Friday's broadcast, if you want to break it down, listen to the details. But I invited the Donald to come to Utah, sit down with me, Governor Gary Herbert, and others. And he could really, really get spot on with what he needs to say and do to win. And it's not the latest manipulative statement to the media. Like, hey, Barack created ISIS. And Hillary was the co-creator. Oh, I'm just kidding. That was sarcasm. Why not break down the real warmongering mentality? Why not break down the hawkish views of both sides of the aisle and the amount of money we put in around the world? And why don't we really roll back foreign entanglements? Roll back the warmongering mentality. Roll back the idea that we nation build in the, or the, quote, world's police state. And start talking about a humble George Washington-esque foreign policy. All right, I digress, but that's the recap. The broadcast is available on demand if you want to listen at libertyroundtable.com or on your Roku player. Look for the Liberty News Radio channel. Without further ado, news the networks refuse to use today starts now. Kirk Cosby with me. Welcome, sir.
Buenos dias. Greetings and salutations. Howdy, howdy, howdy. Thank you, Sam.
You're very welcome. Our buddy Lowell Nelson, campaignforliberty.org, also on the broadcast. Hello, sir.
Good morning, gentlemen. Good to be with you.
All right. Speaking of the war-making mentality that we've had in America for longer than you and I have been alive, I guess there's an international issue Lowell wants to chat about. Why did the United States bomb Hiroshima? I guess Diana Johnston wrote an article about it, and Lowell's got the details.
Yes, Sam, I do. Just find this to be another great reason why your listeners should be visiting the RonPaulInstitute.org website on a regular basis, at least weekly. Wonderful articles there. You know, Sam and Kurt, I grew up believing that dropping the atom bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki was really in the best interest of humanity because it saved lives. What did you learn in your public school if you went to public school?
Well, I went to public school, unfortunately, sir, and I learned the same thing. It was to save lives, and most importantly, it was to end the greatest war the world's ever known.
Interesting.
And it was to stop Hitler from just absolutely going crazy and taking over the world, sir.
That's right.
Right? Well, I mean, isn't that what they tell you?
Yeah, that's what I learned in the public school I attended. And,
well, first you got to press rewind and say that was a war we didn't even need to be in. We had foreknowledge of it, and literally our leaders participated in the scandal to draw us into the war. That's first off, right?
That's right. I think the Secretary of State at the time, FDR's Secretary of State, his papers clearly indicate that the United States lured the Japan into war with us. Basically, they fainted weakness and did all they could to get Japan into the war, to develop this huge Pearl Harbor event that would make Americans mad enough to get into the war. And I think that's what happened. But this story about Hiroshima and Nagasaki, it made sense, yes, but it just never felt right to me.
When you say it didn't felt right, here's the problem. Most people realize that this idea of war is peace is bogus. In other words, you inherently know how can war be peace. You inherently realize how can war be peace. And that's what they want you to believe. We achieved peace through greater war. And inherently, people know that just doesn't make any sense. They may not be able to put the finger on it because that's what they're told their whole lives. But as Lowell says, it doesn't feel right. We'll talk about that and a whole lot more. Incredible column at Ron Paul Institute. We'll do it in seconds. Liberty Roundtable, live.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Hello everyone, James Edwards here. Are you sick and tired of liberals and race hustlers and the media calling you a racist just because you oppose Obama's policies? Well, my friend, those days are over. After you read Racism Schmacism, you'll never again fear being called the R word. I invite you to discover why every conservative in America needs a copy of my explosive new book. Racism Schmacism has received much critical acclaim and will equip you with the key to unlock their socio-political nuclear bomb once and for all. Order your copy today by visiting the official website of the Political Cesspool radio program, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Proceeds of each sale go to help keeping our award-winning show on the air, and they make great gifts for your conservative friend or family member. Buy Racism Schmacism today at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.
Promoting God, family, and country. You are listening to Liberty Roundtable Radio.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're here to challenge the narrative. Why did the United States bomb Hiroshima and Nagasaki in August 1945, huh? RonPaulInstitute.org has an incredible column by Diana Johnston. The bombs were dropped, ladies and gentlemen, not for the reasons that you were told in government school. You were told that it was to end the war. And it was to save lives. Absolutely big old lie, Lowell.
That's right, Sam. This is the official story. We've heard it all of our lives, but it is flat out a lie. The bombs were dropped to see how they worked and to show the world that the United States possessed unlimited destructive power. The Diana, in her column, makes it very clear and backs up her statement with rock-solid evidence of people writing in their memoirs, people communicating with each other, top generals, the Joint Chief of Staff there. I mean, we'll get into that. But basically, the decision to bomb Hiroshima and Nagasaki was a political one, not a military one. I mean, neither city was a military target. Were they manufacturing tanks? No. Were they manufacturing trucks and planes and armaments? No. These two cities, neither one was a military target. The attacks were carried out over the objections of all military leaders. Admiral, and this is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral William Leahy, wrote in his memoirs that the use of this barbarous weapon at Hiroshima and Nagasaki was of no material assistance in our war against Japan. The Japanese were already defeated and ready to surrender. General Eisenhower, General MacArthur, and even General Hap Arnold, commander of the Air Force, were opposed. Japan was already devastated by firebombing, facing mass hunger from the U.S. naval blockade, demoralized by the surrender of its German ally, and fearful of an imminent Russian attack. In reality, the war was over. All top U.S. leaders knew that Japan was defeated and was seeking to surrender. And so, with the news, Sam, of the new Mexico test of the atomic bomb, along with that news came this euphoria of unlimited power, which came to President Truman and his Secretary of State, James Byrne. It reinforces the old adage that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. If you were handed this kind of power, Sam, and said that you can now destroy millions of or hundreds of thousands of people with a single bomb, I mean, that would sober you, it would sober me. But what did it do to the power mongers in power back in the time, the ones who were, the president of the United States back then? They began thinking, hey, we can get away with anything, man. We have a weapon so powerful that we can do anything we want. Nobody's going to push us around anymore. And so that was their thinking, and that's what they proceeded to do. First with Moscow, with Russia. You know, during the war, Sam, Eisenhower, as the supreme military commander of the Allied forces in the European theater, was working with Russia to put down this Nazi communist regime that Hitler had put together. And Eisenhower was confident that with effort and continued work, Russia and the UK and the U.S. would be able to keep these kind of tyrants out of power and keep the world safer. I mean, that was Eisenhower's belief.
Well, and the idea on top of that was that you can use the greatest economies in the world to literally isolate nations, economically shut them down, and literally prevent them from growing their tyranny and their force. But yet, when you have partners that transfer weapons and training and support, then the game changes. And that's kind of what we were facing, right?
Yes, I think so.
In other words, enemies from within, if you will.
Yeah. There's always, power mongers both outside the country and inside the country. And the case here was that Russia had agreed to move in into the war, had agreed to enter the war and crush Japan's encroachments into the eastern borders of Russia, right? And Japan was afraid. They were fearful that Russia would enter the war. Well, Russia had already agreed to enter the war, and so it was well understood by the world leaders that Japan would surrender if and when Russia entered the war, and if, of course, the royal family in Japan would not be tried as war criminals. And so both of those things were agreed to, and they happened in August of 1945. This was, they had agreed, Russia had agreed to enter the war 3 months after Nazi Germany was defeated. As you remember, it was in the spring of 1945 when Germany surrendered. And so 3 months later, here it is August, and Russia enters the war. And they promised that the royal family of Japan would not be tried as war criminals. And so Japan, they're ready to surrender. The war's over, right? Well, but we wanted to see what the bomb would do, and so we dropped these two bombs, one on Hiroshima and one on Nagasaki, killing hundreds of thousands of people, and materially affecting, adversely affecting, you know, thousands and thousands more who didn't die, but who were genetically, you know, modified, genetically damaged because of the atomic weapon. And who gets credit for ending the war? Not Russia and U.S. and the U.K. working together to crush the Japan, but the bomb gets credit for ending the war. And so that just emboldened President Truman and his Secretary of State at the time to start pushing people around. We're going to be a bully now. We're not going to follow through on the promises we made to Russia, even though they were scrupulously honest about doing what they said they would do, in foreign affairs. We promised, and then we never followed through on our promises. And so we started bullying them around, and they dug in their heels, just like you and I would have done, accelerated their own atomic bomb program, and thus the nuclear arms race began. It would have been a far better situation, Sam, had the United States had, like you say, a humble foreign policy, a George Washington-esque foreign policy, and simply said, look, we're strong, we can defend ourselves, and we won't brook an attack by other nations upon American soil, and you know, leave it at that. But no, we had to be a big bully and start bullying other nations of the world around. Now, Russia, because of their arms race, we couldn't push them around so easy, and so we started pushing around their surrogates, or people, you know, countries we thought were their surrogates, such as Iran and Guatemala and, of course, Vietnam, the surrogates of the Soviet, the communist regime, the communist enemy, the communist boogeyman, which all really precipitated our current situation, where we still continue to try to be the policemen of the world. We try to bully these countries around the world into doing what we want them to do. And so to sum this up, you know, here's Diane Johnstone in her article saying, systematic official lies about the necessity to save American lives have left the collective American conscience perfectly clear, while the power of the bomb has created a lasting sense of self-righteous exceptionalism in the nation's leaders.
And the same thing is true with the Civil War, Lowell. You know, we act like we had to have the Civil War to abolish slavery.
Mm-hmm.
Again, another lie. You learn about William Wilberforce and other examples, and no doubt slavery would have died out, would have changed over time. A little bit of patience, a little bit of pressure economically and otherwise could have eventually made that difference. We didn't need to go to war for that. It was about states' rights for the most part, via the federal government continuing to accelerate grabbing onto power. And we see a similar scenario where there's always this scapegoat lie of a reason. And then what happens is government increases power, takes power unrighteously unto itself, and the people suffer. We'll talk about it. Lowell Nelson with us. CampaignForLiberty.org on your radio. We're talking about some incredible columns won by this Diana lady, Johnstone. RonPaulInstitute.org. Next, we'll talk about a Ron Paul column, too, that dovetails very nicely indeed. Quick pause. Liberty Roundtable, live.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
With news this hour from LibertyNewsDaily.com, I'm William Grigg. Employing information data mined through comprehensive unconstitutional surveillance, DEA agents routinely use travel information to profile people who might be ferrying money for narcotics traffickers, though they almost never use what they have learned to make arrests or build criminal cases, reports USA Today. Instead, the agency uses the travel plans of American citizens to conduct seizure operations intended to feed the monster, in the words of former DEA supervisor Louis Weiss. The newspaper observes that DEA agents have profiled passengers on Amtrak trains and nearly every major U.S. airline, drawing on reports from a network of travel industry informants that extends from ticket counters to back offices. Agents assigned to airports and train stations singled out passengers for questioning or searches for reasons as seemingly benign as traveling one way to California or having paid for a ticket in cash. Through the procedure called civil asset forfeiture, law enforcement agents can seize property or cash and claim that it is somehow connected to criminal activity. The property is then sued in a process called in rem, which means against the thing, in which the owner has to prove that it was not derived from criminal activity. DEA units assigned to 15 of the country's busiest airports seized more than $209 million in cash from at least 5,200 people over the past decade. Some of the haul was portioned out to cooperating local police agencies, with the DEA keeping a cut as well. Law enforcement agents would give victims of this Stasi-style surveillance and confiscation scheme a receipt and then send them on their way without charging them with a crime. For the news the networks refuse to use, turn to LibertyNewsDaily.com. For LibertyNewsDaily.com, I'm William Grigg.
Attention Liberty News Radio listeners. Hard-hitting talk radio has never been and never will be supported by the mainstream in America. Hard-hitting talk radio is taking on the mainstream press like never before. News the networks refuse to use is one of the best ways to educate people. We invite all liberty-loving Americans to join with us to restore the principles of our founding fathers and promote God, family, and country in the media and our lives. Please help spread the liberty message with your generous donation. You can go online at libertynewsradio.com right now and make a donation online. Or call 801-756-9133 and make a donation over the phone. That's LibertyNewsRadio.com and 801-756-9133. Make a donation today. Begging politicians, bureaucrats, and educrats, and all do-gooders to please obey the supreme law of the land, the Constitution. This is Liberty Roundtable.
Our guest riding shotgun today, Lowell Nelson, campaign for liberty.org. Why did the United States bomb Hiroshima and Nagasaki back in 1945? The article was written by Anna Johnstone, Ron Paul Institute. .org if you want to learn more about the column. The bombs were dropped, ladies and gentlemen, not like we were told, to save lives and to end the war. That was already happening. Economically, you can stop wars easily. But the bombs were dropped to see how they would work and to show the world that the United States had unlimited destructive power. The decision was not a military decision. Rather, it was a political decision, ladies and gentlemen. Neither city was a military target, by the way. And so it's a serious, serious issue. War is an evil thing, ladies and gentlemen. And 99 out of 100 times you'll find that what happens is there's a group of people that want greater control and power over the people. War is one of the ways they get it. War is also one of the ways they get out of taking responsibility for their former actions leading up to a war. And one thing to remember about these wars, every time I see a big war happen, I see an easy way that could have been taken to get out of it, to change the game, to not have that escalate where it did. You take the Civil War. We're lied to and told, hey, we had to stop slavery, for crying out loud. Just had to do it. The evil South, slave owners, I mean, by golly, thank heavens that everybody's free now. Now we're all slaves to the IRS, right? It's a lie. William Wilberforce and other nations dealt with slavery in a different manner, and they were successful. There are peaceful ways by appealing to God, by good, honest, self-governing people who believe in God, family, and country to accomplish these things. Now you take World War II. A different but yet similar scenario. A lie about what happened and why. But we're getting to the truth, ladies and gentlemen. Americans are starting to become astute studiers of history, and thank heavens they are. All right, any other tidbits on Diana's column before we move to Ron Paul's column, Lowell?
You mentioned the Civil War.
Yes.
You mentioned Wilberforce, and I just wanted to plug the movie about him. It's entitled Amazing Grace.
It's a great movie, by the way.
Wonderful movie. If you haven't seen that movie, I would encourage everyone to see that movie and see how Great Britain ended the slave trade in their country. And just like so many other countries did, the United States did not have to go to war to end slavery. In fact, they did not go to war to end slavery. That was not the reason they fired on Fort Sumter. That is totally bogus. Slavery was not the issue behind the war between the states, or somewhat what the Southerners like to call the War of Northern Aggression, and I find myself in sympathy with that perspective. So just to wrap up this column, Sam, you might wonder why I would bring this up. Well, it's been 71 years since we dropped those two bombs on Nagasaki, and for the first time in my life, Sam, I feel like I'm finally getting at some of the truth, and I was elated to read this column. This is information I never stumbled onto ever before. I wanted your listeners to hear about it and to know the source, Diana Johnstone, whose column is posted at ronpaulinstitute.org, because I think we ought to learn from history, Sam. Why not learn from our history? And if we were to learn any moral lessons, take any moral lessons from this, it is really that we have no moral authority to bully other countries around. We are so far off the track that George Washington outlined for our country, which is to have a humble foreign policy, to be strong enough that nobody attacks you, but also strong enough not to bully other people. And so, like Ron Paul said during the presidential campaign, he said, we need a president strong enough to resist the temptation to bomb everybody and to run everybody's lives. That's the kind of courageous and strong president I want.
Well, and it's kind of like George Washington's personal life as a pattern, you know. He was the greatest general the world's ever known. They didn't understand it at the time, but history bears out the reality. When he was offered a chance to be a king or to take the helm, he said, won't do it. When he was elected, he said, all right, if I must. That's the balance we're talking about.
And he was elected unanimously, Sam. Do you know how much respect he received from his colleagues? It was a unanimous election in Electoral College, 1791, I believe. Didn't he take office in 92? I can't remember exactly. But anyway, it was a unanimous decision because they respected him so much. That's the kind of gentleman and gentlewoman we need in politics today. But instead, we have to deal with these other, you know, clowns that trying to run our lives and trying to bully other countries, Sam.
Yeah, kind of like you have Tweedledee and Tweedledum right now, ready to go. It's kind of a scary scenario. Ron Paul even points this out very well. His column says, liberty loses no matter who wins, Ron Paul. Lowell Nelson follows up and says, why the 2016 presidential election should not even matter. And we talk about it to ad nauseum. I agree. I think we must. But the problem is people think we're not caught up on the news is one of the sad issues today. Nevertheless, the column is incredible and breaks down some of these war details we've been talking about, Lowell.
It sure does, Sam. I like the way he starts out here. He says, for all the hand-wringing about the threat to liberty and constitutional government posed by the major party presidential candidates, there is little discussion of how this threat is due to the political class's long history of supporting expanded presidential power. There's also little talk of how the imperial presidency is just as much a creation of Congress as it is of power-hungry presidents. So breaking this down, Sam, this is what I think he said. He said that liberty-minded people like you and me and your listening audience are very, very concerned about Clinton and Trump because we worry that the winner is going to use the power of the presidency to take away more of our liberty. That's what we worry about, right? We say, look, Clinton...
And by the way, that worry's justified. It's the conclusion that we need to really think about.
Yes. Clinton's going to take away our guns. He's going to you know, ramp up the TSA. She's going to do all kinds of bad stuff. Trump is going to have his finger on a hot button, and he says things that he doesn't mean. Sometimes he's sarcastic. Sometimes he's serious. You just don't know what he's going to say, and he's like a loose cannon. And, you know, but nobody is asking, how in the world did the president become so powerful? And why in the world is Congress so complicit in this subterfuge, right? I mean, nobody's asking that. Ron Paul is absolutely right. Congress is complicit. Both parties, Democrat and Republican Party, both are complicit in this this problem that we have. Wouldn't it be wonderful, Sam, if it didn't matter who got elected? Because regardless of who gets elected, they're going to execute the laws of the United States. They're going to stay within the lawful bounds prescribed by the Constitution of the United States. They're not going to try to run the states. They're not going to try to bully other countries and start wars and make America or make the world safe for democracy. And I mean, wouldn't it be wonderful just to have an election where it didn't really matter that much how people got elected? I think that'd be a totally wonderful thing. And so Ron Paul gives us some reasons. I mean, the most of his column is talking about what it is that the president, what power he has. He starts with the Defense Production Act, probably the best and most terrifying example of how national security is the justification for giving dictatorial powers to the president. This law, regularly renewed with large bipartisan congressional majorities, that grants the
president... And by the way, and no critical eye from the media whatsoever.
No, I'd never heard about this law, Sam. Had you, this Defense Production Act?
No, sir.
Not a word. Well, the reason Ron Paul knows about it is because he was probably there in Congress for year after year, cycle after cycle, always voting against it. He was probably like one or two or three people out of 535 congressmen who voted against it. That's how why he knows about it, and he's bringing this to light. Just another reason why people ought to regularly take a look at ronpaulinstitute.org. He talks about this law granting the president broad powers over the economy. For example, explicitly authorizes the president to tell manufacturers what products to make, to impose wage and price controls, to manage labor relations, to control the use of natural resources, and the allocation of credit. And all the president needs to do to exercise these powers is to declare a national emergency. And then he gives other examples of presidential power mongering. The president nowadays can initiate war. He, despite the constitutional requirements, though only Congress may declare war. The president may do anything in the name of national security. He may pick and choose whatever laws or parts of law he wants to enforce.
And then they make you to believe if anybody stands against him that they're leaving the troops out to dry. And all kind, it's bogus. Quick pause.
Yeah.
Lowell Nelson with us, campaignforliberty.org in seconds.
Scott Bradley here. Most Americans are painfully aware that the nation is on the wrong track and in dire straits. Unfortunately, most political pundits only nibble around the edges when they claim to address the issues. Even worse, many of the so-called solutions are simply rewarmed servings of what got us into the mess we currently face. And the politicians think we're so gullible and naive that we'll buy their lies that they have reformed and now understand where they led us astray. Unfortunately, the truth of the matter is that they simply wish to continue to hold power. The solution to America's challenges is found in returning to the timeless principles found in the United States Constitution. My book and lecture series will reawaken in Americans an understanding and love of the principles which made this nation the freest, most prosperous, happiest, and most respected nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com. and order my book and lectures to begin the restoration of this great nation.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
If you're at all like me, you have a tough time remembering appointments and events. But ladies and gentlemen, I have the answer. It's a premier service on the internet called Memo to Me. It's free. You ought to try it. Now I never miss the honey-do items from my wife or the important business meetings. They have strict privacy protection. That means they will release your email address to no one ever. You will not get spam because of Memo to Me. Unmatched dependability. Ladies and gentlemen, these folks have been around since 1998, and they are absolutely up online all the time to send you your reminders and appointments. They have rock-solid reliability. They have 5 redundant internet connections, diesel-powered generators backing up the system. I'm telling you, Memo to Me is the premier reminder service on the internet. It's free. You ought to give it a try. And, oh, by the way, if you're not available at your computer to get your email reminders, they can even send a reminder to your cell phone or pager. I use MemoToMe.com daily and highly recommend it to you. MemoToMe.com. Memo to Me.
With news the networks refuse to use, you are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right, back with you live. We're talking to Lowell Nelson, campaignforliberty.org. We're talking about interesting tidbits relating to Ron Paul's latest column, why the 2016 presidential election should not even matter. Liberty loses. Wow, sorry, guys. Liberty loses no matter who wins. Ron Paul's column, ronpaulinstitute.org, to learn more. We're talking about the Defense Production Act. The question is, what do you know about it, huh? This is the best and most terrifying example of how national security is the justification for giving dictatorial powers to the president. It's crazy. Both sides of the aisle have been for it forever. As long as people expect the president to provide economic and personal security, the presidency will be a threat to liberty no matter who's in office. We don't need to care about whether it's Tweedledee or Tweedledum, right? We need to focus on spreading the ideas of liberty, Lowell.
You're exactly right, Sam. And Ron Paul, that's really why he got into politics in the beginning, was simply to spread the ideas of liberty. Economic prosperity, you know, peace, prosperity, and freedom. That's why he got into this, and I agree with him. We need to make popular that which is right, that which will bring peace, that which will bring prosperity to ourselves and our posterity. We do this by spreading the ideas of liberty, and he ends his column, Sam, in these words, only when a critical mass of people demand it, will we return to limited constitutional government. The growth of the liberty movement gives me hope that we will soon see a day when our peace, prosperity, and liberty is not threatened by the results of the presidential or any other election. End of quote. End of column, actually. And so, yeah, radio shows like yours, Sam and Kurt, help this movement grow. And so I encourage all people everywhere, let's take advantage of the great information that's available on internet radio, that's in books published by liberty-minded thinkers, people who want to expose the truth, to get it out there. You know, truth stands on its own as long as we can get it out there and come in contact with it. And it's by the dissemination of the truth and the spread of this kind of information that we can learn the lessons of history and that we can resolve to ourselves we're not going to be duped to repeat those mistakes of the past, and instead we're going to make decisions which will guarantee the peace and the prosperity for ourselves, our families, and our posterity.
By the way, World War I could have been avoided as well. Anyway, it's a big, long digression. Nevertheless, why does this matter? The future is what matters. And let's bring it up to modern times, if you will. There's another column, same topic virtually, different theater, if you will. Stories by Brian McClinchy. Lowell?
Thank you, Sam. This story is found at 28pages.org. 28 is it's the digit 2, the digit 8, followed by pages.org. So that's 28pages.org. Now, Sam, you and I, you know, 15 years ago, were told what about 9/11 attack? Who was behind it?
Well, first off, it was the evil Iraqis behind it, Saddam Hussein and crew. You had to go in and stop them. They had weapons of mass destruction. That was just the first strike, and they were going to be on a bender to destroy the whole world, almost like Hitler. Well, a lot smaller, but yet, you know what? Just getting started. And the first thing they failed to tell us is, well, that guy was our friend, and we're the one that built him up yesteryear before that. But anyway, he became the latest boogeyman. Had to go in because of weapons of mass destruction to stop him. It all turned out to be a lie, Lowell. More details are even forthcoming about who, what, when, where, and why. And right after that fact, Ron Paul spoke to Congress, and he basically pegged to a great degree who was responsible, and everybody just ignored him and laughed and snickered and mocked. But now the evidence is beyond debate, sir.
That's right, Sam. Isn't it interesting that the United States is the one who paid Osama bin Laden and helped and armed him and so forth to fight against the Russians in Afghanistan, and then turned on him and took him out? Isn't it interesting?
We armed, trained, and funded him.
Mm-hmm. And then isn't it interesting that we did the very same thing for Saddam Hussein in Iraq, and then we turned on him, took him out. And isn't it interesting that the U.S. funds and trains and props up the very boogeyman that we are now fighting today in the form of ISIS? We did the same for Al-Qaeda. We are doing it for ISIS. We prop up these boogeymen so that we can have somebody to fight against, so that we can prop up the military-industrial complex, make people rich, and the power of the almighty dollar and the power of jealousy and greed, that they happen to reign supreme in the hearts of a lot of political leaders around the world. And that's terribly unfortunate. And the only way we're going to stop that is that we need good, honest, wise men and women to be involved in government at all levels of government. This is your local community, your local county, your state and nation. And only by our involvement and the involvement of righteous men and women are we going to be able to turn the tide on this. And so I was just thoroughly interested in this column. I had heard that there were 28 pages of the 9/11 report that had been classified and that the public could not read. And this was classified in 2002 or 3 or so. And only recently, in fact, 2 weeks ago, Sam, these 28 pages were declassified. And I don't hear the major media talking much about this at all, but that's what we're doing here this morning, ladies and gentlemen. We're bringing to light the content or the essence of those 28 pages that were 2 weeks ago declassified. And what they tell us, Sam, is that the Saudis had a big, had a lot to do with the funding and the planning of the 9/11 attacks. But that was hidden from the public because the Bush administration and those behind it wanted the American public to think that Iraq was behind the attacks. That's what we were taught. That's the lie.
Every time we back into a scenario where our leaders knew, deceived us for the war narrative, it happens over and over and over. World War II, Vietnam, World War I, the Civil War, and now even the Iraq War, right?
That's right. And so how do we know this, Sam? Well, it turns out that the former State Department official, Lawrence Wilkerson, is the one who has been bringing a lot of this to light. Now, Wilkerson was chief of staff to Colin Powell, right? And you remember, everybody remembers Colin Powell. He was Secretary of State, right, that went in and gave this speech in the United Nations and connected. He said that Al-Qaeda in Iraq was responsible for the 9/11 attack, and now we need to go take them out. Well, it turns out that Wilkerson and Powell both decided not to put that connection in the speech. They decided, man, we are not going to, because it's really shaky, this information about Iraq being behind the 9/11 attack, and so we're not going to put it in the speech. That's what they decided. And it turns out that, Wilkerson says, he says, you just couldn't kill it. We tried. We put a stake in that thing 10 times. It kept raising its head. The vice president would not turn it loose, says Wilkerson. That's part of why they tortured people to try and get more information on the connections between Al-Qaeda and Baghdad. It's part of why they shifted their interrogation focus away from another attack on the U.S. to connections between Al-Qaeda and Baghdad. And anything that reinforced that, anything that made their case for war more legitimate and more acceptable to the American people, that's what they wanted in the speech.
And by the way, Ron Paul nailed this even back in the day. I can't remember the exact year, but it was right 2003, 2004, 2005, somewhere like that. He spoke before Congress, and he flat out fingered this as the reality. Even back then, he nailed it, and everybody just laughed.
Yeah, I think it was 2003, Sam, and people can go back and listen to that again, but he is being proven right by what this information has come to light just in the past 2 weeks. And so basically the CIA director Tenet and the deputy director McLaughlin came in and they told Colin Powell that a high-level Al-Qaeda detainee had just revealed under interrogation this link between Al-Qaeda and Baghdad, including this misinformation that Iraqis were training Al-Qaeda operatives in the use of chemical and biological weapons, and they were the world's next Hitler regime coming to power, and we needed to stomp them out. Well, so Powell put it back into his presentation. Later, we come to find out that the claim that McLaughlin and Tenet made had been extracted a whole year earlier from a detainee named Al-Libi via torture at the hands of the Egyptians, and that the DIA gave it little credibility. Sam?
But it continued the narrative, just like the weapons of mass destruction lie did, that forced us into, again, another war. Ladies and gentlemen, we need to reject the warlike people mentality. We need to hold our government officials to account. The best way to ratchet them down is to force honest money to be the currency of the day via the supreme law, so that they can't run away with printed money and wage unrighteous, unjust, illegal war. We need to quit funding, training, and arming terrorists. And it starts with a George Washington-esque, humble foreign policy. Lowell, my friend, thank you so much, sir.
Pray for peace, ladies and gentlemen.
Amen to that. Thank you, sir. All right, hour one in the can, hour two coming up. Three websites, LibertyRoundtable.com, LibertyNewsRadio.com, LibertyNewsDaily.com. Donate today. This nation shall endure.